This Is Your Life, episode 33. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be answering listener questions. I get lots of questions every week. Many of them don't fit neatly into a single topic, or they're not really germane to that particular podcast episode. So I thought I'd just deal with them in this episode and cover as much ground as we possibly can. But first, today, I'm so pleased to announce that we just opened registration for the Platform Conference, which will be held here in Nashville on February the 11th through the 13th, 2013. I told you I would announce it here first to my podcast audience, and I'm doing just that. You're the first to hear about it. And we only have 135 tickets total. This is going to sell out really, really fast. The conference really is for anyone who wants to jumpstart their platform or take it to the next level. This is the fast track. If you're a public speaker, a blogger, a recording artist, a business owner, an entrepreneur, a salesperson, a mortgage banker, a pastor, a corporate brand manager, this conference is for you. If you're trying to get noticed in a noisy world, if you're trying to get visibility for your message, for your product, for your service, for your brand, or even your business, this conference is for you. Now, the conference is going to be organized around the framework that I laid out in my New York Times bestselling book, Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World. But we're going to have a segment on starting with wow, another segment on preparing to launch, another segment on building your home base, another segment on expanding your reach, and another segment on engaging your tribe. We've got an unbelievable lineup of speakers. First of all, Ken Davis, who's my partner in Dynamic Communicators International and a terrific speaker, is going to be talking about wow. Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income is going to be with us and talking about monetization of your platform. Jeff Goins from GoinsWriter.com is going to be here, and he's going to be talking about blogging as a home base for your platform. Stu McLaren from Wishlist Member, the membership software that's out there. It's an add-in or a plug-in for WordPress, and a guy who's working with me on my own membership site will be here to talk. Cliff Ravenscraft, also known as the Podcast Answer Man, who's taught me everything I know about podcasting. Believe me, I still got a lot to learn, but he's taught me everything I know, and he's going to be talking about podcasting. So if you're a better talker than a writer, that could be a great alternative for you. John Saddington, who first introduced me to WordPress and got me converted from TypePad to WordPress, will be here. John's a serial entrepreneur. He started many businesses and sold them, online businesses, and he's going to be here with us as well. Carrie Wilkerson, also known as the Barefoot Executive, she's got a terrific book by that title and a terrific online presence, mostly video, and she'll be here to talk to us. Andrew Buckman, who is my web developer and working with me on the Get Noticed premium WordPress theme, which I'll tell you more about at the end of this show, kind of a progress report on where we're at, but he's going to be here as well. And then Michelle Cachette, who is the lady who co-hosts and really MCs all of our Dynamic Communicators International conferences, and she does just a terrific job. She'll be with us, and then I'll be leading a couple sessions myself. But the venue for the conference will be the famous Sound Kitchen Music Studio here in Nashville, Tennessee, regarded by many to be the best recording studio in Nashville. It's going to be a great atmosphere of professionalism and intimacy. And most of all, the reason we picked it is it's going to allow us to capture some great video for a product that we want to introduce to the marketplace later on. But again, we only have 135 tickets. I wished we had more, but when they're gone, they're gone. And so I'm announcing it here to you first. If we don't sell out in the next week, I'll announce it on my blog next week. So don't wait till then. You don't want to wait. You don't want to risk the opportunity to come to this event. I don't know when I'll be able to get a lineup of speakers like I've got coming to this. I am so excited about these people who have agreed to come and speak. But you can get all the details at platformconference.tv, platformconference.tv. And I've got a link in the show notes so you can get more detail there. So let's get into this episode. Every week, as I said, I get dozens of voicemail questions from my podcast listeners. And I personally listen to every single question or comment that I receive. but I can't put them all on the air because some of them, they're just not apropos to the subject of that week. Some of them, frankly, the sound quality is not that great. And oftentimes people who are leaving the messages don't know it on their end, but for whatever reason, just the way the telecommunication system works, the quality isn't that great. So please don't be offended if I don't use your question. I got way more questions than I could possibly get on the air. It would take me four sessions to get them all done. But I am truly, truly grateful for every one of these questions I receive. I never take them for granted. I'm just in awe of my audience and just their level of engagement. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But today, I want to devote the entire episode to answering listener questions. And I've arranged them kind of by topic, to give them a little bit of flow and a little sense of cohesiveness. But the first one is kind of a personal question, and it comes from Alex.
Hey, Michael. My name is Alex Ferrero. I blog at ferrero51.wordpress.com. I was just curious. You talk a lot about your professional life. What are some of your hobbies that you enjoy? Just kind of curious. I throw it out there. Thanks, Michael. I enjoy your podcast and everything that you do.
I would say this, my work and my hobbies are so intertwined that I sometimes don't know where one ends and the other begins. Is writing my profession or is it my hobby? Well, I enjoy it so much that it could be either one. I love this great quote that's attributed to James Michener. I don't know if he actually said this or not. I couldn't source it, frankly, but it's still a great quote nonetheless, whoever wrote it. He says this, "The master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his information and his recreation, his love and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence at whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. To him, he's always doing both." Isn't that a terrific quote? And you know, it's been an aim of mine to be able to speak and to write full time, and I'm doing that today. So that's, in a sense, my hobby. It's also my profession. But, you know, if you really want to get strict and pin me down and say, what are some of your hobbies? Here's a couple of them. Running. I haven't always been a runner. I didn't start till I was age 50, but I love it. It's something I do almost every day. It's a way for me to clear my mind, to get new input, creative input, and just to kind of refresh myself both physically and mentally, and even spiritually. I also do quite a bit of reading. I read a couple books every month, you know, maybe three or four, frankly, but I enjoy that as well. Golfing, occasionally I do that. I've really given a lot of my golfing life up for the sake of running, but I still occasionally golf, and I always enjoy it, always enjoy the fellowship with the guys when I go out. And then something I took up a couple of years ago, and I kind of am hit or miss about this, but I'm trying to learn how to play the Native American flute. Yes, the flute. And I love the sound of the Native American flute. And Gail bought me two of them for my birthday a couple years ago. And those have been really fun. It's a great stress reducer. So now let's move to the topic of platform building. And the first question in this category comes from Aaron.
Hi, Michael. This is Aaron Myers. My website is the Everyday Language Learner. That's everydaylanguagelearner.com. And my question is just how important is networking and connecting with other bloggers, and perhaps especially bloggers who've got a bit more of an audience than you, for the success of and the growth of a blog platform? So thanks so much and have a great day.
Aaron, the short answer is it's very important. It really helped me early on. Seth Godin was and is a big inspiration to me, but it's still important to me. In fact, several of us who are bloggers in the Nashville area are talking about forming a blogging mastermind that'll meet at my home once a month just to talk about blogging, what we're learning about online marketing, and really to stimulate one another and to help one another solve the common problems that we face. But why is it important? Well, a couple of reasons. One, you can learn a lot by observing how other people, other bloggers that are more successful than you perhaps, do certain things, and you can mimic their success. And then I would say a second reason it's important is that if you make friends with them, they might just promote your work. And I can tell you that there are young writers that I have specifically helped because I took an interest in their work. I liked what they were doing. For some reason, we just connected, and I have promoted them. And I think that all of them would acknowledge that that was very beneficial to them. So the more you can connect with these people, the better off you'll be. And I think we're living in a time when the online community or the online economy rewards generosity. I know Gary Vaynerchuk wrote an entire book on that, but I think it's true. This particular online world that we live in today does reward generosity, and it's worth reaching out to other people, and it's also worth helping promote their work. And that's one of the ways you can get attention. That's just kind of a little inside secret, but one of the ways that you can get the attention of the bloggers that you really want some help from is promote their work. And I've done that with some of these guys, and they turned around and gave me a helping hand. It was very, very beneficial. Brad's got another question about platform building.
Hi, Michael. This is Brad Blackman at bradblackman.com. I want to say I've been enjoying your podcast, and it's a really great resource. I have been very interested to follow you online, your online presence, since we met at Thomas Nelson a few years back. And it's been interesting to watch how it has progressed and evolved, especially when you began to blog about productivity tricks and gadgets and things like that, and then to up to what it is now, where you mainly blog about intentional leadership and platform building and all the iterations in between. I really have two questions. It's kind of a two-part question. Part one of my question is, what were the deciding factors in making those changes from really one version of your brand to another? And what caused you to pull the trigger once you noticed that there was a new change coming up? Thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Brad. I actually get that question quite a bit, especially when I speak on platform in a live context. People come up and they want to know about that because maybe they started writing on a specific subject or topic area that they're no longer passionate about. Well, the key to success in any area is finding that spot where your passion, your competence, and market demand intersect. Those three components. And I taught on this at our recent launch conference, and then I wrote about it on my blog, and the post was called The Three Components of Job Satisfaction, and I've got a link in the show notes to that particular post, but I think it will really help you. And the problem is that most of us have difficulty sorting through what we're passionate about, let alone what we're competent at and what the market might demand. But I think step one is to figure out what we're passionate about. And so for me, I got out there and I just started writing on what interested me at the time. And I think sometimes we tend to overthink this and we're trying to be, if it's possible, too strategic. I would say, what are you passionate about right now? Get out there and start writing. So for example, at first, I was interested, as you correctly pointed out, personal productivity and gadgets, and I had a website that was called Working Smart. Well, then I became the CEO of Thomas Nelson, actually as the COO of Thomas Nelson, I got really interested in all the various publishing viewpoints and the technologies that were changing the face of publishing. And so I started doing a perspective on publishing from the inside, and it was called From Where I Sit. Well, then I started writing on leadership because as the CEO, obviously that was job number one, was leading my company. And I became very passionate about that and was learning a lot of things. And so I started blogging on that at michaelhyatt.com. And that's really where I began to really just focus on my personal brand and not to be so niched in a topic area. And I also got interested in social media about that time and started writing on that. But I think the way that you find your niche, the way that you find your expertise is to get into motion and listen to your readers. Notice what gets the most traffic. Notice what gets the most engagement. And notice, and this is really important, at least it is to me, notice what energizes you. Because you may pick a topic area and it may be really niche, if that's a word, something that's really tightly focused, which is great theoretically, but it's not great if you don't have passion and enough passion to sustain you over the long haul. So I know, for example, that my blog would do a lot better, my podcast, frankly, would do better if I were more tightly focused. The problem is I have pretty broad interests. And if I'm not engaging those interests and talking about them, I just lose interest. And then what used to be a joy becomes a real chore. So the trick is to really find something you're passionate about and then to write on that and to get into motion. So that's my best advice for knowing when to start, when to shift, when to keep going, is just kind of follow your passion and make sure you're obviously confident at that topic and there's a market demand for it, but it starts with your passion. David asked the next question about platform building.
Hello, Michael. This is David Specht. I blog at davidaspect.com. My question today is, how did you stay motivated to blog regularly while you were building your platform? I would imagine in the early days, you felt as if you were spinning your wheels and didn't have a Michael Hyatt of your own to turn to, or did you? Thank you for all you do. God bless.
Thanks, David. Well, what kept me going was being very connected to my why. I didn't start blogging because I was trying to build a huge platform. I didn't even know that was possible. In fact, I couldn't have defined a huge platform. I didn't do it to make money. I didn't know that was possible until several years into it, when frankly, John Saddington, whom I mentioned earlier, who will be at the platform conference, said, hey, you could really monetize this traffic through advertising. I didn't even know that was possible. Didn't consider it. But what I did blog for was the following reasons. I blogged to clarify my thinking on various topics. And I've said it here, and I often say it when I speak on the topic of platform, but I don't usually know what I think about a topic until I've blogged about it, until I write about it, because thoughts disentangle themselves by passing over the lips and through pencil tips. I also blogged to archive my best thinking because I often found that I was repeating some of my techniques, some of my strategies, some of my tactics to the people that were in our company and even people in my industry. And so I thought this is a great way to archive my best thinking. And then I can just point people to an article that I've written on this where I've really carefully thought it through and deconstructed it and made it so that people can replicate it. I also just enjoy sharing my discoveries. I'm the kind of person who always likes learning. And this was a way for me to share my discoveries on a broader scale than just my family and friends. I also really enjoy assisting other people or helping other people in solving their life and work problems. And then I really began to see the possibility of impacting others. So I stayed very connected to my why. And I would say for you that when you begin to lose gas and when it becomes a chore, go back to the why. Gail, my wife, says, when people lose their why, they lose their way. And so if you want to find your way again, if you've lost your way, then get back to the why. And to be honest, I didn't really look at that many bloggers for inspiration. And so I just didn't look at them for inspiration. I looked to my readers. They were the ones that inspired me with their comments, with their emails. Just the fact that I was having an impact on them really, really energized me. And by the way, I think this keeps you from getting caught up in the numbers game. I mean, if you're having an impact on a handful of people, isn't that worth it? I mean, that's a privilege to be able to do that. It doesn't have to be thousands, but just a handful of people that you're having regular impact on, to me, that would be enough. That would be a privilege. The next question on platform comes from Emily.
Hi, Michael. I'm Emily Ryan from Houston, Texas, and I blog at PriorityMinistries.com. And my question is in regards to platform, and specifically your thoughts on two or more people sharing a platform. Which do you think is better for a writer or speaker in the long run, to reach as many people as possible, even if it's through someone else's platform, or to establish your own platform with your name and your brand alone from the ground up? Or is there a third option in which you share a platform while establishing your own on the side? And if so, at what point do you break off and just focus solely on your own? I'd love to hear your thoughts, and I really appreciate everything you do. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This is a great question, Emily, and I don't think there's a right answer here. I think it depends on the season of life you're in, your ultimate objectives. I think the most important thing when you're just beginning as a blogger or as a writer is to find your voice. And the only way I know to do that is just to write lots and lots and lots and lots of content. You'll find your cadence, you'll find your voice, you'll find where you're comfortable expressing yourself. And when you begin to not think so much about how you're expressing yourself, but you're just trying to get your point across, then you're getting close to the destination. And so I would just say whatever that takes to keep blogging consistently, if you have to do it with a group, if you find that stimulating, do it with a group. It can always change later. Now, I'd also say that for me, I personally, and again, this isn't the right answer, this is just my answer, what I would choose, I would rather own a smaller brand and have the freedom to explore and do what I want than be part of a group. Now, there are some things that I really enjoy doing in a group. Like I love doing the conferences that I do with Ken Davis. He's a great business partner, and I just love interacting with him and being part of the team that puts that together. But when it comes to my blogging and my writing, I really prefer to do that alone. I'm going to be co-authoring a book this next year, and so that's kind of a new thing for me. But that's after I've established my personal brand, and I've been at this for a while. I also want my brand to be portable so that I'm not held hostage to a group, so that if I want to go off and do my own thing, I've got my audience that's going to go with me. So again, no right answer, but you've got to ask yourself the question, what's your ultimate objective? What season of life are you in? And what makes sense for now? The next question on platform comes from Jason.
Hi, Michael. My name is Jason Gardner, and I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri, and I blog at applicationtalk.com. I have a question about getting traffic to my website. I hear a lot of people tell me to go to forums and social sites online, Facebook, LinkedIn, and do work in forums to get traffic to my site. But it seems like all those people that are there, that are in the places I can post freely, are all doing the same thing, or they're teaching on blogging. So how can I get relevant customers to my site?
Jason, the short answer is write great content that people want to share. You can't be in enough forums. You can't write enough guest posts that will overcome weak content. And I'm not saying you have weak content. I don't know, frankly. But you've got to write content that people want to share, because you've got to get the word of mouth thing started. You've got to get other people evangelizing, as it were, on your behalf if you're going to be successful. So that's where the bulk of my focus would be. Guest posting is also a wonderful tactic. I've got a chapter in my book, Platform. It's the only chapter written by somebody else, and it was written by Jeff Goins, because he's an expert on guest posting, and he's largely built his current platform on guest posting. He's doing some other things now. I do have several chapters on this in my book, Platform, but I would just say that you've got to write content that people want to share. The other thing I would say, and I just reviewed your site just quickly, and I don't mean this as a criticism, but something maybe that would be helpful to you, is that I didn't really see anything that was personal on the site. And I think, you know, from my perspective, I'm not looking for just another objective review site. I want to hear your voice. I want to connect with you personally. So that may be something that you might think about, is your own personal branding. I think personal branding is the wave of the future. It's the easiest and the best way to distinguish yourself from all the other people out there, because there's only one of you. And so even if you're writing on the same topics that other people are writing on, it's filtered through your personality, and that's what makes the difference. The next question is from Scott.
Hi, Michael. This is Scott Moore with thecallofmen.com. I love your podcast, and I was just wondering what advice you have for aspiring platformers like yourself who are stuck in the corporate world but desperately want to build a platform and go full-time as self-employed bloggers, podcasters, etc. Thanks for all you do, Michael. Have a great day.
Scott, first of all, this is totally possible. I built my platform while I was the CEO of a publishing company. So I had a very busy job. It had huge demands on me, but I still was able to find time and build a platform. So don't get sucked into the lie that if you've got a full-time job, you can't do this. And then I would say, don't quit your day job. If you haven't read John Acuff's book, Quitter, you ought to do that. And he talks about exactly how to do that, how you can build a second job or a second career without quitting your day job. And I try to think of it like a second client, your platform or the audience that you're serving as a second client. If you had a business yourself and you had 90% of your revenue coming from one customer, I think that you would feel pretty vulnerable, like you were overly dependent on that one customer. And yet people who are in corporations do that every week. They've got essentially one customer that they're selling their services to. And I would say you've got to diversify. And so building a platform, it's possible. And I did mine by working on Saturday mornings and Sunday evenings and grabbing a few minutes here and a few minutes there. And it's entirely possible. And it wasn't until it reached critical momentum that I was able or even contemplated the possibility of stepping away from it. So that's the platform category. I want to shift now to the topic of personal development. And the first question is from Chelsea.
Hi, Michael. My name is Chelsea. I am a missionary assistant working in Chile in South America. I'm currently working on your life plan, on my life plan, rather, using your template, and I'm really thankful for that resource. I have one roadblock, however, and that's in looking at my priorities. I'm 23 years old, and I'm currently dating someone, and I'm wondering, where exactly does my boyfriend fit in terms of priorities? He's not obviously my spouse, and at the same time, my work is also very important. So I'm wondering if you have any insight on that, and I'd appreciate any reply you could give me. Thank you so much. Bye.
Well, last week on my podcast, episode 32, I did talk about how to create a life plan. And the system I shared is built on a metaphor that compares your life accounts to your bank accounts. So for those of you who are listening who didn't get to hear that episode, that's what Chelsea's talking about. Chelsea, you're asking whether or not your boyfriend should be really a life account or what priority you should assign to that account. And I think, frankly, it depends on where your relationship is and where it's going. At some point, this is a conversation worth having with your boyfriend, and hopefully he will initiate it. But if he won't, you may have to bring it up. You know, it's that old DTR conversation, defining the relationship conversation. But in general, I think it's probably going to be higher than your friends. This account with your boyfriend is going to be higher than your friends or your social account, and lower than your spouse account because you're not married yet. When and if you become engaged, then at that point, I would recommend that you assign it a priority similar to that of a spouse. But at this point, my guess is that it's something you enjoy, but it's exploratory. There's not been a commitment made yet, and therefore, I don't think it deserves the same level of attention that a spouse would. So, you know, I'd probably have to know a lot more detail to give you really specific advice, but that's just some kind of a general framework. The next question under personal development comes from Jen.
Hey, Michael Hyatt, this is Jen McDonough from TheIronJen.com. Who do you let speak into your life as far as what podcasts you listen to, what blogs you read, and what are your favorite authors? I am blessed to have found you in my life when one of my favorite mentors, Dan Miller, had mentioned that your podcast was fantastic, and I'm just delighted to have found you and would love to hear who you intentionally let speak into your life. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Dan is a good friend, and I'm grateful that he introduced us to one another. And Dan is one of those people that, as I've gotten to know him, I let him speak into my life because he's got tremendous wisdom and perspective. But honestly, in general, I'm very eclectic. I have a lot of diverse interests. I'm also a little bit of an intellectual nomad, so I move from place to place. I've got interest in one topic area, and then I swarm that for a while and suck down everything I possibly can and learn, and then I move on to another subject area. I also don't just read or listen to stuff I agree with, and there's people that, you know, they just can't handle that. They have to only read stuff that they agree with, which, frankly, to me is very boring. So I read a lot of stuff that stimulates my thinking, that challenges my thinking, that gets me out of my paradigm and helps me to get new insights. But right now, some of my favorite podcasters are Andy Stanley, Dan Miller, whom you mentioned, Pat Flynn, Ray Edwards, and that's really a new friendship, but he's got a terrific podcast. Eric Fisher, also that I met through Cliff Ravenscraft, and Eric's got a fantastic new podcast. And then Cliff Ravenscraft, you know, and frankly, there's, you know, I'm interested in podcasting, but it's not something that I would listen to all the time, except that Cliff's personality is so inspiring, and I just like getting his perspective on life. Some of the authors that I'm reading, and this will show you how crazy eclectic I am, but I'm reading Rabbi Daniel Lappin's book, Thou Shall Prosper. Great, great book on business. John Maxwell, somebody who's a friend and somebody I've read for years. Seth Godin. And then Stephen Pressfield, who just writes about writing and just the challenges of overcoming what he calls the resistance and having steady output, creative output on a predictable basis. I also read a book a month with my mentoring group. We just finished Radical by David Platt. Last month, we read Samson and the Pirate Monks by Nate Larkin. So it's a different topic each time. So there you have it. The next question comes from Kevin.
Hi, Michael. This is Kevin Quinley from Chesterfield, Virginia. I blog at my website, claimscoach.com. I loved your recent podcast on start of day rituals. Have you ever considered a bookend podcast on end of day rituals to wind down each day? I'd be interested in hearing about yours and interested in hearing your thoughts about how to be intentional about your end of day rituals. Thanks a lot.
Kevin, that's a great idea. I'd like to tell you that I have a very thought out, carefully defined end of day ritual, but the truth is I don't. Or at least when I heard your question the first time, I thought, you know, basically I fall in bed exhausted at the end of the day and that's it. There are actually more to it. Gail and I pray together, for example, at the end of the day, and there's a lot of things that we go through, but yes, I will consider doing an end of the day, ritual podcast and really think through that with a little more clarity. But right now I don't have much to offer you. The next question comes from Otis.
Hello, Michael. My name is Otis Henderson. My website is coachotis.org. And my question for you is, what recommendations do you have for a self-leadership plan for someone who is not a beginning leader, someone who's been in leadership for 10 years or more? What are your suggestions? Because, as you know, a leader needs to diversify their growth plan, otherwise it gets stale. Thank you. I love your blog. God bless.
Thanks, Otis. You're absolutely right. If a leader is not growing, he's not leading. And then you experience what John Maxwell calls the law of the lid, where, you know, people bump up against the lid on your leadership and they have a hard time pushing past that. And you get stuck and you really can't lead people as long as you're not growing. I would recommend you that you get my free book, Creating Your Personal Life Plan, and it will help you think about your life in a holistic way. I noticed that you're a coach, and so maybe you're already thinking this way, but in terms of self-leadership, that's really where it has to begin, is having a map or an intention about your entire life, every major category. Then I would pick up John Maxwell's newest book, which is called The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. And in there, he basically answers your question in much more depth and with much more insight than I could possibly offer you. So yeah, I think at the cornerstone of any personal growth or personal development plan is really reading. As John has said before, and I agree with, leaders read and readers lead. So the more you can read, the more you will grow. The next question comes from Robbie.
Hi, Michael. My name is Robbie Kleinberg, and I'm a 23-year-old musician living in Brooklyn, New York. My question for you is, what sort of advice do you have for people living in different decades of their life? For example, someone in their 20s might have different needs or questions or life plans than someone in their 50s. Thanks for your help. Hope to hear from you.
Robbie, this is a terrific question. And you know, at first I thought, wow, I'm not sure what I would advise. So I kind of thought about it off and on today as I was preparing for this episode. And this is kind of a general framework. And, you know, I reserve the right to change this later as I've thought through it. But here's kind of how I think about it. Your 20s, really the focus should be on learning. You know, you've been through high school, hopefully college, but this is where you actually decide whether you're going to be a lifelong learner or not, and you're going to continue your education. Because honestly, once you finish college, then your education begins as you get out into the workplace and have a family and all the rest. So I'd say the 20s, you know, focus on learning. 30s, focus on investment. You know, these are very demanding years if you have a family and if you're really on the fast track at work, because work requires a lot, your family requires a lot, and it's really, really hard to balance those two things. But the 30s are really about investment. 40s, I think, are where you're really trying to maximize your performance and focus on performance. And maybe it's about management. I don't know that that's really the right word, but performance is definitely the word here, because how you perform in your 40s is going to really determine how you're setting yourself up for the future and for the rest of your life. And then your 50s, if you've done it right, I think it's about leadership, focusing on influence. How can you take what you've learned, what you've accomplished, the fruit of your investment, and how can you give it away? How can you lead others and really influence others? And then I think in your 60s and beyond, and I haven't got this figured out because I'm not there yet, but it's really about coaching or counseling or advice or giving back, being the sage. And in fact, John Eldridge talks about that in his book, The Way of the Wild Heart, where he lays out in more depth kind of a framework for understanding the different stages of a man's life, at least. I'm not sure how this would fit with a woman's life, but I'm sure it would. But he talks about the stages of being a cowboy, a warrior, a lover, a king, and a sage. And it's a great book. So if you haven't read that, I would encourage you to pick that up and it might give you some guidance. Okay, now we're going to turn to the topic of publishing. And the first question comes from Mark.
Michael, this is Mark S.R. Peterson. I blog at Peters from the Outhouse, blogspot.com. And had a had a question. I've been meaning to call your show for a while now. So I've had this question. And I unfortunately haven't picked up your book platform because I've been going through all your stuff, and I was just kind of wondering if your book platform is just for nonfiction writers, because a lot of things we talk about building platforms and stuff seem to be more geared towards the nonfiction side of it, or if it does apply to fiction writers as far as myself. And probably maybe an added question to that is, how does one go about building a platform with maybe all you really want to try to do is entertain people? So I said, I do have a blog myself, which I do blog a few times a week, where I cover the business of writing and kind of get in the mindset that you're serious about writing. You've got to have a mindset of a business person. Of course, I listen to Dan Miller's podcast, and I listen to Dave Ramsey and stuff, your friends on there. So just kind of curious on that side of it as far as if it does apply to fiction writers. So, all right, thanks.
Mark, I often get this question as well. In fact, I spoke at a fiction writers conference back in August, and I think that initially people don't think that applies, but it does apply. Absolutely, it applies. In fact, novelists need platforms as badly as nonfiction writers need platforms, and there's no reason why you can't build a platform. And my book, Platform, does have a chapter in it that provides 13 blog post ideas for novelists, and I think it will stimulate your own creativity and help you figure out how you can be a blogger and how you can blog about things that are related to the novels that you write without doing it like a nonfiction writer would do it. And, you know, I do talk about it a lot from the nonfiction perspective because, frankly, that's what I know. But it'll at least give you a start, and I think you can adapt it, and you desperately need a platform. Every novelist does, if you don't want to be dependent on the publishing industry and their marketing or just people stumbling onto your book. You want to build an audience that's waiting for that next great novel that you're going to write. The next question comes from Mike.
Mike, this is Mike Hansen from Parker, Colorado. I'm at chaplainmike.com. I have a question around the book publishing process. I'm really enjoying your audio book or audio series on publishing. And I wondered if you had to go through the book proposal process with your book platform with Thomas Nelson or any other publishers. And if you did, how was that process? Was there any chance you wouldn't get published? So just curious. Thanks.
Yes, absolutely. I did have to do a proposal. Well, actually, I don't know if I had to do one, but I wanted to do one. I wouldn't think of approaching a writing publish or project without doing a proposal. As Stephen Covey said, start with the end in mind. And a proposal provides a blueprint for the writing process. I mean, you wouldn't just start building a house without a plan. Why would you write a book without a plan? But a proposal gives you the clarity about how the book will unfold. And this is critical, a proposal provides a way for you to enroll others in the process. And it's going to take a lot of people that are enrolled in the process with you for you to succeed. So a proposal is one of the things that does that. Now, look, I wrote what I thought was a brilliant proposal for my first book. Still, it was rejected 29 times before it was accepted for publication. And I wanted to quit. I talk about this in my Get Published course, which you can find at michaelhyatt.com/get-published. But I talk about that experience. And it was hugely helpful for me at the time. I'd had years of publishing experience. I'd been a literary agent. I'd been a publisher. And yet I was still rejected 29 times. You can't take anything for granted. Probably with Platform, which was my eighth book, it was less likely that I was going to get rejected. But the proposal was still just as necessary. And I would encourage you to do one for the book you're thinking about for all the reasons that I stated above. Now I'm going to move to the topic of leadership, and the good news is we're almost done. This is the last question, and it comes from Matt.
Hi, Michael. It's Matt McWilliams from mattmcwilliams.com, and I was wondering, what were your biggest doubts or fears as a leader when you took the CEO job at Thomas Nelson, and how did you overcome those doubts and fears? Thanks a lot, Michael.
Well, thanks, Matt. That's also a great question, and I would have to say that without question, the biggest fear that I struggled with was my own sense of inadequacy, that somehow I wouldn't be adequate to the task. I wasn't smart enough. I didn't have enough experience. I wasn't tough enough, because after all, as a CEO, you got to be tough. You got to make these decisions. And I just wasn't confident at all that I had what it took to succeed in that job. And I overcame that, frankly, by realizing that I didn't have to be the smartest, toughest, most experienced person in the room. All I had to do was recruit those people and create an environment in which they could thrive. And this is why I say, and I wrote recently about this, why a great leader is like a great symphony conductor. Yes, you have to know the music. Yes, you have to have a creative or an artistic vision, or in the case of a CEO, you've got to have a vision for what the company looks like when it's done or where it's going, but you don't have to play all the instruments. And what I had to do was I had to recruit people that could strengthen me, that could balance out the team, that would give us a full palette so that we could really do an amazing job as a team, not so that I could stand out as an extraordinary CEO. So that's about all the time we have. What other questions do you have? You can leave a question or you can comment on anything that I've said in this episode at michaelhyatt.com/033 as in episode 33. This past week, I was checking my podcast stats and, by the way, discovered that I had just passed 1 million downloads. Wow. Thank you, thank you, thank you for you making that possible. If you had told me last February when I started that I would hit this level of downloads, I wouldn't have believed you. But we did pass that milestone. I did pass that milestone, and I'm very grateful for your help and your support in doing that. I wanted to give you just a quick update on the Get Noticed WordPress theme, which I announced a few months ago, and I didn't announce when we would ship it or when the beta would be available, but I just wanted to give you an update here. We are making steady progress. Shocking, but it's turned out to be more work than we anticipated, especially to get it into a format that other people could easily use it. And so we're putting the finishing touches on it, Andrew Buckman and myself, but this is going to be a killer theme. And I'm asked every day when it's going to be ready. My best guess right now is that we're going to ship the beta before December the 1st. And we've got one piece of the puzzle that has to fall into place for that to happen. But I think we're very close. Some of you may be wondering when version one, the actual production version that you can buy, will ship. Well, I'm not really committing to that yet because we're going to have to see how the beta goes. Now, frankly, if I had more experience, if we'd been through this loop before, maybe we could give you a better date, but we haven't. And I don't want you to base your plans on me giving you a date and then that date comes and goes and then you're upset with me because I didn't deliver when I said I was going to deliver. So I'd rather just underpromise and overdeliver and say, I'm not sure yet. So we will keep you informed. I'll keep you informed, but I still think that we can get the beta out before December the 1st. And there'll be an announcement on my blog, and we're going to invite people to apply for that beta. And we're not going to, frankly, take very many people because we don't want to be overwhelmed. But this is going to be worth it, I promise you. My next podcast is going to be the topic of email etiquette, all the stuff that drives me crazy that other people do in their emails, how to have better emails that get read, and really focusing on the etiquette side of it. So if you have a question on any topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. If you've got a question on this topic, especially please leave a question there for me. But it's a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'm going to link to it just like I've done with all the callers in this episode. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be very grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, and scroll down to the comments section. I'd love to hear from you. Comment, question, whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you?